We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the Illinois economy and the state budget. And if you've been paying attention to the news, you know that the state of Illinois has some very serious budget problems. In fact, now, according to a report that was just released, I believe just released yesterday, by the Pew Center for the States, Illinois is one of the 10 most financially troubled states in the country. This is something that you can read online if you go to their website. The report is titled Beyond California, States in Fiscal Peril. The report cites Illinois for, quote, its lack of fiscal discipline to balance its state budget, the $13.2 billion budget gap for the fiscal year 2010, that said that was among the top three in the country. And certainly that makes things look very bad here for the state of Illinois. And in this part of Focus 580, we'll try to talk about where we are now and what is being discussed in Springfield to deal with the issue. And our guest for the program is Ralph Martiri. He is the executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. Also serves as a regular columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, the State Journal Register, the Herald News on issues involving government accountability, tax, fiscal, and budget policies. He's a frequent lecturer on fiscal policy. He teaches at Illinois State University and is often interviewed on tax issues on the public stations in Chicago, WTTW and WPWR, also other kinds of media outlets around the country. He's here in Champaign-Urbana to give a talk on the state budget. And this is an event that's being sponsored by the Champaign County League of Women Voters. And he'll be talking at noon today. This is at the City Council Chambers in Urbana on South Vine. Anyone who is interested in attending should feel welcome to stop by and hear what he has to say. And also here on our program, questions from listeners are welcome. We just ask people, please be brief and stay on the topic. We'd like to get in as many as possible, but questions, comments are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Thank you very much for being here.
Well, thanks for inviting me on.
I wonder, just, you have anything in particular? This is now, we're paying attention to this. We got a good hook to hang this on because of this Pew report that just came out yesterday. And it's certainly made the front page, I think, of probably most of the newspapers. And if it hasn't, it will. Any particular reaction to that?
Well, I mean, I'm glad Pew finally noticed. We've been saying this about Illinois' fiscal condition and how poor it is and how poorly we stack up to other states for at least 9 or 10 years now. So the bottom line is this is nothing new. And I think one of the concerns we have in my organization, bipartisan group that just tries to get good policy passed, is folks are going to blame way too much of our problems on the recession. The recession's going to come, the recession's going to go, and our problems are still going to be here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what people really have to understand. Illinois' budget problems and economic problems are structural and long-term, and certainly the recession made them worse, but it didn't cause them. Mm-hmm.
Can we just talk a little bit, give us a little bit of a snapshot of the Illinois economy and what has been happening with the economy in the last couple of years?
Yeah, not even a couple of years. Let's go back to 1990.
Okay.
From 1990 forward, Illinois' economic growth has lagged both the Midwest specifically and the nation generally. Mm-hmm. That's not good. It's especially not good if you think we started out as the fifth largest economy in the country. And so we should have some competitive advantages, really, especially to our Midwestern neighbors, because we have a far larger economy than any other Midwestern state. And the biggest concern, if you compare us to the Midwest, is Michigan is included in the Midwest, right? So while the Midwest seems to just barely be outperforming Illinois, it includes Michigan. You take Michigan out, and the Midwest is really outperforming Illinois in job growth. Now, one of the major reasons for our economic problems has been the substantial loss in high-paying, good-benefit manufacturing jobs. So from 1990 through the beginning of the recession, so before the recession really hit, we lost over 27% of those jobs. That's about 250,000 high-paying, good-benefit jobs. And what we replaced them with almost exclusively, really, are low-paying, low-to-no-benefit service sector jobs, and the transition there has actually been very dramatic. So in 1990, manufacturing was the top employer in all of Illinois, 20% of the workforce. That's one out of five workers. Today, manufacturing is down to fourth, less than 13% of the workforce, and number one, low-paying service jobs, 30%.
Yes, as you say, for a number of years now, Illinois has been lagging behind the national economy and also the Midwest economy. That has to translate into lower revenues for government, so government has less money to work with. Is that really at the root of the problem that we have with now this over $13 billion budget deficit?
No, you know, it's a contributor, but it's not the root. The root cause is we simply have a tax system that doesn't reflect the modern economy, doesn't tax the modern economy, doesn't satisfy any of the principles of sound public finance for a capitalist economy. And if you don't satisfy any of the principles for a sound tax system, you're not going to have a sound tax system. You're going to have one that doesn't perform, and ours doesn't perform. In fact, it performs miserably. So every year, if you just adjust for inflation and population growth, right, so you don't expand services, whatever, revenue growth won't keep up with service cost growth. You won't be able to provide the same level of services the following year. And that's a real problem for a state like Illinois, where I think most elected officials like to promise the continuation of services, especially things with broad general appeal like education. So they promise the service, don't have the revenue to fund it. So then they're left with some really bad fiscal choices if they want to keep providing key services. Top poor fiscal choice available, don't make your employer contribution to the state pension system. Just don't make it. And if you don't make it, and somebody down the road will have to make it certainly, but in the long term, politically speaking, we're all dead. So leave that for when you're dead politically. Mm-hmm. And take the money you should have put into your employer contribution and use it for schools or healthcare or human services. And that has been going on in Illinois for over three decades. That has been done by Democratic and Republican governors. That has been done by Democratic-controlled and Republican-controlled legislatures. There is no one party or person you can point the finger to blame at, and that's pretty good. As far as I'm concerned, who cares who's to blame? It's everyone's problem. We got to fix it.
Yeah. Here, just I got some callers here, and we'll get to them. But you just – I want to come back and sort of draw a line under something that I think is really important, where you're talking about the fact that you can see over time what it will cost to provide basic things that people expect a state to do. We have prisons we run. We have schools we run. We have to pay Medicaid and health costs. There are a number of fairly fixed costs that we know are maybe fixed is the wrong word to use, because we know that over time those costs are going to go up. And we have a pretty good idea, if nothing changes, what's going to happen with revenue. And if you plot this out on a graph, this is what is called the structural deficit. You plot this out on a graph, you can see that the revenues, well, maybe they'll go up a little bit. They're not exactly flat, but the costs shoot way up. And those two lines just spread out further and further as they go out into the future. So if nothing is done, we do nothing to increase the revenue, that spread is just going to get wider and wider.
Yeah, and you know, the first time we mapped out this structural deficit, as you call it, and let's just be very clear, that sounds like a fancy term. It's really not a very complicated term at all. All you're doing is comparing, starting from a given year, and assuming the state honestly had a balanced budget. So that's a pretty big assumption, because any year you'd start with, there was going to be a built-in deficit. But just assuming your revenues and your costs were equal in that year, if you just adjust for inflation and population growth and assume a normal economy, normal historic trends, what would be the cost of maintaining your services from that year going forward without expanding or increasing or adding a service? And what will your revenues generate? And the way those lines look in Illinois, you're very right. The cost of just maintaining static services going forward grows at a rate much greater than what our revenue system will produce. The reason for that is pretty simple. Your costs will grow at a minimum with normal economic factors. If your tax system does not match the modern economy, your revenues won't grow with the economy over time. So there will have to be lower revenues than cost growth. It just has to be that way, and that's what Illinois has. First time we looked at the Illinois structural deficit, and we used Dr. Fred Gertz actually designed our modeling. He's a U of I guy, and he's at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and he's beyond brilliant and very decent with a great sense of humor, by the way, kind of dry, but great. Anyway, Fred put this together for us, and in 2004, it showed that by 2010, the mismatch between revenues and costs would be about $4.8 billion. It would be about a $4.8 billion deficit. And if you look at the 2010 budget, we think the actual deficit within that budget right now is about $6.2 to $7 billion in real deficit terms. So we were understating it a little bit, but we didn't predict the recession. I think if there wasn't a recession, we'd have hit it pretty close to on. So we have this long-term problem. It is a structural problem. And it's not about runaway spending. It's not about crazy spending. It really is. The state's never had a tax system that's matched the modern economy. And that forces politicians who don't want to deal with these tougher issues into a political choice. Do I just game the fiscal system and engage in irresponsible fiscal practices but make it look like I'm maintaining services? Or do I level with voters, tell them we need more tax revenue to support even a base level of services? And that's a very difficult thing for most politicians to do. They don't do it, and we get our problems.
Yeah. So in Springfield now for some time, there have been some people who have said, look, the situation is untenable. And what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to increase taxes. We're going to have to increase the income tax. Maybe different people have different ideas, but I think there are some number of people among them of the two like one of the other of these guys, either Dan Hines or Pat Quinn, probably is going to be the Democratic candidate for governor next year. They have both talked about this. There are also many people, though, in Springfield who have said, no, that's not necessary. We don't have to raise taxes. We can go after the usual suspects of waste, fraud, and abuse, and just cutting spending. They said, just no. The problem is we're spending too much. We can cut spending, and that will take care of this problem, and we don't need to raise taxes.
Well, let's get to waste, fraud, and abuse, because this is Illinois. You'd figured we'd have a line item for it, but sadly, we do not. And we tried to isolate out of the general fund what we actually spend our money on. And my organization, and you could go to our website, we produce a pie chart on that that shows exactly where all the general fund expenditures go. Interestingly enough, 86% of our general fund expenditures go to three things: education, health, and human services. Human services are primarily grants made to private providers like Lutheran Social Services, Catholic Charities, Jewish Federation, etc., who take care of people with mental health issues, developmental disability, homebound seniors, abused and neglected kids, domestic violence, you know, all that squishy government stuff. So that's 86% of our budget. Another 4.5% to 5% is public safety and corrections, the state police and the prison system. So now you're talking 90-91% of the budget on just that. And we tried to say, okay, well, where else are they wasting money? Well, they have to make that pension payment. That's about 4-4.5% of the budget. And that leaves 4-4.5% of the budget for everything else, including management, including administrative costs. And now that's where you could, you know, hide a political hack, right? You stick them in some mid-level management job as some payoff. Lord knows Blagojevich was really good at that. But at the end of the day, even if that's where there is some abuse of the system, and I'm assuming that there is, I'm sure you assume that there is, bottom line is it's not nearly enough of the budget to account for the massive deficit problems. If, in fact, the hole in the 2010 budget is, let's just call it $6.2 billion, and I'll tell you how we get to that number. If that's the hole, that's a 21% deficit. That's a 21% hole in a $26 billion budget. So if your problems are in only 4% of the budget, and not all of those are waste, fraud, and abuse, you do need management. You do need administration. You can't run anything, right? No business can operate without it. If even half of those costs are wasteful, you've saved 2%. You got a 21% problem this year. You got a 47% problem next year. I'll tell you how it grows and why the Pew number is accurate. And so really, it's not even gilding the lily. It's being dishonest with voters that you could solve the problem by cutting spending. Here's what I think every candidate who says that should be asked to do: identify with particularity the programs you would cut and the dollar amounts you would cut each of those programs by. Don't just tell us you'll find waste, fraud, and abuse. We don't believe you can. If you can identify for us $6 billion, $7 billion, $8 billion in cuts, please put them on the table. The reason you'll never see a candidate do that is because they know, number one, they can't. And number two, even if they wanted to, they'd have to be cutting education, health, and human services because that's 86% of the budget. You can't cut other areas and solve the problems.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Ralph Martire. He's the executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. He also serves as a regular columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, the State Journal Register, the Herald News on issues involving government accountability, tax, fiscal budget policies. Is interviewed quite often on this subject. He's here to give a talk sponsored by the Champaign County League of Women Voters. And that's today at noon at the Council Chambers in Urbana. Anybody who is interested in stopping by is welcome. Questions are welcome, too. We'll try to make us take as many as we can. Callers will help us by being brief. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Lines are full. We'll start in with line 4 and a Champaign caller. Hello.
Yes, hi. Yes. I am a graduate student here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, and I wanted to know if our guest could speak a little bit about the educational component of the state budget, because right now, today at noon, there's going to be a rally among all the graduate students that are employed by the university to demand increased wages and other things that I know would put a greater demand upon an already fragile budget situation for the state of Illinois, and just wanted to know what his perspective is on that situation as it relates to things like this. In a university educational setting.
All right. Thank you for the question. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's a great question, and good luck with your rally, because talk about blood and turnips. At the end of the day, 7.4% of our general fund budget, which I include within our broad education spending pattern, is what goes to higher ed transfers, and that's everything from the community college system on up to the universities. What you need to know is that from the beginning of the Blagojevich administration on until today, higher ed appropriations at the state level in real terms have been cut dramatically, close to $1 billion, if not a little bit more than that now after you adjust for inflation. So higher ed is experiencing significantly declining support from state general fund appropriations, which means they are turning more and more to other things, users' fees and tuitions in particular, among them private fundraising, to make up the difference. Now, you can't make up that much difference with any of those three things, and so it becomes a very difficult situation for individuals who work for the university and feel like they should be receiving a slightly higher pay. There's really not a lot of pay available for the university to go out, find, and get to you.
Yeah, and right now, this university, in fact, I think it's true of all public universities in the state, are behind in their reimbursements from the state. That is, the universities have submitted literally millions of dollars in bills to the state, and they're waiting to be paid. And there's some question, I think, in a lot of people's minds about when that payment will come and how it is that we meet payroll.
Well, you want to hear a sort of interesting statistic. I mean, right now, Illinois has about $4 billion, 3.9 something. So let's call it $4 billion in unpaid bills that don't appear in the 2010 budget. They're just not even accounted for. These are late payments that are owed to some Medicaid service providers, and really not service providers, mostly folks that sell prescription drugs, because under the federal law that gave us stimulus money, you had to get your payment cycle to 30 days on Medicaid. So about $1 billion of that is to prescription drug sellers to mitigate services, and the rest, universities, human service providers, anyone that contracts with the state is just not getting paid, and payment cycles are being stretched out well over 100 days now. These are records, of course, in Illinois. So not paying bills is a real problem and usually caused by not having any money, and that's really the state situation.
All right. I want to thank Carl. Let's go next to someone in Roscoe. This is line 1. Hello.
Hi, this is Bob from Roscoe, Illinois.
Yep.
Isn't it true that when Blagojevich first came in, there was an opportunity and kind of a general consensus, even among manufacturers and Chamber of Commerce types, to increase the income tax to get the state out of their fiscal problem? And then after that, when he refused to do it, supposedly because he didn't want to tax poor people, the Republicans started playing the game of, well, we don't need an income tax, or we don't need any tax increases, we can just cut waste. And the and Madigan on the other side is now willing to give up what he perceives as his majority for, you know, for the sake of having an income tax increase and getting the state out of their fiscal problem. Isn't it kind of an a problem that just can't be solved this time?
Well, it's a problem that certainly can be solved. You've identified some of the political issues. I think I'm not aware of any massive movement within the Republican Party to admit that the fiscal problems are at least in part caused by the failure of the revenue system. So I think the Republicans for a long time have politically been saying, you know, revenue is not the place you should look. Now, there's been some notable exceptions. Your former state senator, Rick Winkle, is one of them. He co-sponsored a piece of legislation with Reverend Senator Meeks back in the year 2006 or so, maybe 2005, that would significantly reform the state's revenue system. And he is no longer an elected official. But his replacement, Mike Frerichs, who's a Democrat, happens to be very strong on the revenue issue and has been making it quite clear the state can't solve its problems. So we've had some brave leadership actually from your community in both parties, so you should be proud of that. The interesting thing is, broadly, though, the Republican Party is always trying to repeat the mantra that things like belt tightening and efficiencies and blah, blah are the way to go. There's no data to support that. I mean, you really can't solve all problems with that in Illinois. So I would say the Republican Party has historically not been for it. Rod Blagojevich certainly wouldn't consider it under any iteration. I mean, he was just not logical on this issue. Successors to him, Pat Quinn has been clear that we need a tax increase. Dan Hynes has been clear we need a tax increase. And I think most leadership. You talk to Senate President John Cullerton, you talk to Speaker Madigan, they'll both admit we need a tax increase. The question is putting together the political calculus that's got enough bipartisan support to get it done.
But Madigan wasn't willing to let it come to a vote because he perceived he might lose a majority in the House, if the Republicans played politics on the other side with it. So they're not willing to make the political sacrifice necessary to bring things into alignment.
You know, although interestingly on that, in May of this year, May 31st, the Senate passed House Bill 174. And yes, it passed the Senate with a House bill number because this is Illinois. But 174 was a major tax increase. It would have increased the state's income tax rate, personal income tax rate, from 3 to 5%, and expanded the state sales tax base to include a select number of services, 39 services, all but four of which are already taxed by all of our neighboring states, or at least one of them. Now, this passed on a purely partisan vote, 31 Democrats, no Republicans, and the Democrats who voted for that tax increase are receiving virtually no pushback in their home constituencies. Mm. Folks get it. You know, voters, I think, are way ahead of legislators on this issue. So you flip it to the calculus involving Speaker Madigan. And frankly, if you have a Speaker Madigan crystal ball, then you're better suited than me. I don't always understand what motivates and doesn't motivate the Speaker. He keeps his cards very close to the vest. I would say, though, that to get a major tax increase passed through the House, he'd want bipartisan support. I mean, I know he would want to have some Republicans signed on. The question is how many Republicans. I could think right now in the House of maybe five or six Republicans, and they're all primarily downstate, that would support a revenue increase because they get it, and they've been out in front on the issue in the past. But is that enough to keep all of his Tier 1 targets off? I don't know.
Just real quick, and I promise we'll get back to some other callers here. You mentioned the fact that here now both Comptroller Dan Hynes and Governor Pat Quinn have said we need a tax increase, and it seems to me that it's very likely that one or the other of those guys is going to be the Democratic candidate for governor. We have, I think, seven Republicans, and I just was reading a story about the very first kind of event that all of them were at, and every one of them, to a man, and I think they are, in fact, all men, said the same thing. They said spending's out of control, and the deficit can be taken care of without raising taxes. And assuming that that's what they're going to continue to say throughout the campaign, do you think that the race for governor next year is going to be end up being some kind of a referendum for Illinois voters on whether we need a tax increase or not?
Well, it could be. And if it is, the Republican Party should be ashamed of itself, because and my group is bipartisan. So I have to say, if that's how they want to position the whole gubernatorial race, it's highly irresponsible and it's ignoring all the facts and it's frankly being disingenuous with voters. So I think every one of those Republican candidates that wants to take a stance that no taxes are needed to solve the state's budget problem needs to produce for voters a detailed list of every cut they would make to every program, identifying program names, the services being cut and the dollars being cut. I think without them doing that, they are being disingenuous by more than half, and here's why. You have a Dan Hines and a Pat Quinn out there saying, not only do we need a revenue increase to balance our budget, here's the exact revenue increase I would support. So you could all look at it. You could see who'd pay more taxes and why, how we'd use the money. It is very clear. It is very transparent. You have to give both of these individuals a lot of credit for being willing to take on a very tough issue and being honest with voters and telling voters something maybe they don't want to hear, but they certainly need to hear. I see none of that leadership coming from the Republican Party. And I always remember the Republican Party as standing for some fiscal soundness in your approach to government, that you ought to be able to pay your bills. We can't pay our bills. We're $4 billion in arrears. We are destroying our private economy. You know, because we're not a high employment state, that is, because we do not have a lot of public workers providing public services, we outsource most of our public services, the folks hurting from the failure to pay are private sector workers. These are workers in home care facilities or whatever, run by private organizations that aren't getting paid. We are destroying our private economy, and it's highly irresponsible. We're asking them to provide the service, and then we're not paying them for providing it. And for it seems to me that's inconsistent with the Republican theory that you have the revenue to provide the services you're providing and that you pay your bills on time. So I really would challenge every one of the Republican candidates to not just have broad rhetoric on this issue, but to be detailed and specific. Let us analyze your plans just the same way we've analyzed Governor Quinn's plan and Comptroller Hines' plan. And frankly, we have found some holes in those plans, too, where we think this or that or the third thing needs to be done or this number or that number doesn't work. But I'll give them credit for this. They are honestly approaching the issue, and they're squaring with voters. And to the extent you can nitpick a plan here, you can nitpick anyone's plan. At least they have the courage and the integrity to address the issue.
Our guest in this hour, Focus 580, again, Ralph Martire. He's the executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. He's based in Chicago. Frequently comments on issues of tax, fiscal, budget policies. And he's here, and we'll talk at noontime today at the Urbana City Council Chambers. His visit here sponsored by the Champaign County League of Women Voters. On to other callers. To line two here, Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have the Pew report up on my computer as we speak, and the reason I'm calling is I'm in the process of moving to Wisconsin, and I see Wisconsin's in trouble also. Do you have any knowledge about what their problem is and how it perhaps, you know, compare and contrast Wisconsin and Illinois and so forth? Thank you.
Yeah, Wisconsin's problems are more related to the recession than they are to long-term structural issues, although I'm going to take a step back from that. Most states have some problem with the design of their fiscal system. There's some anachronistic aspects to it that really should be reformed. I mean, if you think about it, fiscal policy on one level is no different than any other policy, whether it's healthcare, education, et cetera. We don't teach the way we taught 45 years ago. We don't provide healthcare the way we did 45 years ago. We don't take care of people with mental health issues like we did. But we tax the way we did 45 years ago because it's such a political tough nut to crack. So most states have some problems. That said, the Wisconsin system is far more progressive than the Illinois system, and it's actually far more responsive to the modern economy. They were hurt very much by the economic downturn, and the scope, or I should say the size of their deficit as a percentage of their overall state spending is significantly smaller than in Illinois. And I anticipate that within 3 to 4 years, they'll be fine. I can't anticipate that for Illinois.
All right. Next caller is Oswego, line three. Hello.
Hello. First off, I got a real quick question. Are you a Democrat?
I run a bipartisan organization. If you want to know my party affiliation, I happen to be a Democrat, and my issues and research director is a Republican named Jim Nolan. I think you've all know Jim. He ran for lieutenant governor, teaches at U of I, and was former head of the Taxpayers Federation. And my board of directors includes everyone from Steve Schnorf, who is the director of the Bureau of the Budget under Governors Edgar and Ryan, and a pretty conservative Republican, to David Wilhelm, the former chair of the Democratic National Committee. So what we try to do on these issues is focused on data-based solutions that are supported by sound capitalist policy rather than any sort of ideological approach. We take a data evidence-based approach and try to apply the soundest economic analysis to what we should do going forward. We try to take all that partisan stuff out of the discussion.
Well, it almost sounds like you're a little partisan. The only reason I say this is I'm not a Republican, okay? I'm not a Democrat or Republican because I quite frankly think they both are responsible for the situation we're in. And I've got a couple of, you know, curious observations. To me, you say we need to tax the crap out of the people. Well, I just heard today Chicago's going to lose another organization for conventions. They're going to go out of state and go to Vegas. From the understanding I heard on the BBM news radio was that they were being forced out. They were priced out of 10 times more than it was last year. I'll just say I'm in the middle. I'm working with a guy who's a Green Party candidate now because I've chose to go that route. What I see is to tax the people and spend. And I know people in politics right now that are, I'm not going to bring up names, that are state senators. One's a very good friend of mine. I've read some of this stuff, and I'm that they can cut out. We're at a time in this history of this country where they need to pull back to 1990s levels instead of 2005 levels. And I understand there are people that are suffering and probably will be suffering, whether it be in the medical or the school field. But quite frankly, I'm watching people in my subdivision go down every single day. I'm a contractor. I'm not making any money. In fact, I'm working three jobs. If they tax me anymore, I'm working 6 months a year to pay for taxes. That's just insane. Illinois is one of the highest paid tax states in the country.
Let me jump in because I got your point, and I hear what you're saying, and I think that there are probably some people who would say, yes, that's where they are too, that it's a terrible time to ask for a tax increase. And I want, because the caller has made this comment before, and I'm sure that there are other people who would say, yes, that they agree that the tax burden is high enough already, we can't take more. What can you say about that, particularly about how Illinois compares to other states in the country or in our region as far as taxes are concerned?
Well, I'll answer that first, and I'll get to a couple of the other comments he said. But one of the first ones I want to get to, and I'm sorry, I'm going to get to a comment he said. I never once said we ought to be taxing the crap out of anybody, quite frankly. I said we ought to tax the modern economy. And I'm going to go on the record, be very clear. I've complimented both Democrats and Republicans on this program. Rick Winkle and Mike Frerichs in particular is taking intelligent stances. And number two, I was the first person to testify in front of the General Assembly against Rod Blagojevich's proposed gross receipts tax because it was a horrible way to tax. It would have been bad for our economy. We are for a thoughtful tax reform that, yes, enhances revenue because we believe we're a low-spending state, and we think the data all shows that, but we are not for tacking bad taxes onto a bad system. So I just want to disabuse that caller of a couple of misconceptions he may have about me or my organization's stances. Now, where Illinois stands, that's actually very easy to answer if you're willing to look at data. Of the 50 states in our nation, we have the fifth largest population, fifth largest economy, and we rank 41st in total tax burden as a percentage of income. And I want to be quite clear on that. When I say total tax burden, I mean absolutely every tax charged by any unit of state or local government and any fee charged by any unit of state or local government as a percentage of our income. So I include our sales tax, our income tax, our property tax, our excise taxes, our cigarette taxes, our driver's license fees, our hunting fees, everything. Compared to every other state, we are in the bottom 10 in tax burden. We are one of the lowest taxing states. Fifth biggest population, bottom 9 in tax burden. We have the second lowest tax burden in the entire Midwest. We take about 14.8% of the income of the individuals in our state and state and local taxes and fees. And Missouri takes 14.7. They are all of 0.1% lower than us. Now, I want to give you context for that. Despite having one of the lowest tax burdens in the entire country and the second lowest tax burden in the Midwest, our economic growth since 1990 has lagged the much higher tax rest of the United States and much higher tax Midwest. We haven't taxed ourselves to a position of economic non-competitiveness. We've done other stupid things that have put us in a non-competitive standpoint from the economy's current structure and where it's going. One of those things that we've done really poorly is failure to invest in K through 12 education and higher education, which in the global economy matters more than ever to economic competitiveness. And we've really fallen behind the Midwest and the nation there. And to fix that, we'd actually need more revenue. And so at the end of the day, it's really not a cause of our failure to be competitive economically that we are high tax. We are, in fact, low tax overall. Now, let me confuse you. We're actually high tax for most people. And how can that possibly be? It's because we're very regressive in how we tax. Regressive taxation simply means low and middle income working families have a much higher tax burden as a percentage of income than do more affluent families. So if you're a middle income, even upper middle income, down to low income working family, you have a very high tax burden in our state compared to other states. And in exchange for your high tax burden, you get the worst funding for your schools and not very good services in your community. So what we need in Illinois is a thoughtful reform, and I hinted at this earlier, that follows the principles of sound taxation in a capitalist economy. And that would mean we would need fair, responsive, stable, and efficient taxation. And to both be fair and responsive with your tax system and how you structure it, you need progressive taxation. You need a tax burden that's greater as a percentage of income on more affluent folks than on low and middle income folks. We're the reverse. That's one of the real problems in our structure. It hurts a lot of families, and it's one of the things that needs fixed.
And just real quick, do you also need to do something about property tax?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, clearly if you look at it, we're the sixth most reliant state in the country on property taxes, and you want a burden that hurts families. We've taken out the impact of inflation on this. From 1990 to 2005, the last year there's national comparable data on property tax collections, because there's always a lag in that available. Over that period of time, 1990 to 2000, property taxes increased in Illinois by over 42%. That's taking out inflation. That's in real terms. You know, in nominal terms, it was bigger than that. But we wanted to see in reality. Median income is only up 2.8% over that same period. So property tax burden in real terms grew at about 15 times the rate of growth in income in Illinois. That's not a sustainable tax. And so clearly, that's one of the flaws in our structure. We way over rely on the local property tax to fund public services, and in particular, education. So the only way around that or to stop this inordinate growth in the property tax, which we should stop, is for the state to step to the plate and pay a greater portion of the cost of public education. State can't do that when it's running a multi-billion dollar budget deficit without new revenue. So if you think I'm sounding hard on any one political party or whatever with their stance that we can cut our way out of this problem, I'm hard on that not because of the party taking the stance, but because of the stance itself. The stance itself, you can cut your way out of our deficit problems in Illinois, is simply not supported by any data. And you could have your own opinion, but you cannot have your own facts. And the people that make this claim over and over and over again will not, do not, never do, identify what they would cut to solve the budget problems. That's disingenuous, and we need to not allow people who want to run for major public office in the state to get away with it.
About 10 minutes left. We have some other callers. Ralph Martirius, our guest. He's the executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. Questions welcome, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next, Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I think if you compare Illinois to other industrialized states, not just all states, it's probably the worst, I would guess. I don't know if you've done that in running your figures.
Worst in what respect?
Just the unfairness of the tax system and just the fact that we're not overtaxed.
Yeah, we really do rank near the very bottom. You're talking about the big states like California, New
right.
York, Florida.
Compared to Mississippi, which has mainly agrarian and not that much industry at all, what's left here in Illinois is probably still larger than there.
Actually, we're lower taxed than Mississippi and more regressive, so we got that going for us.
Okay. what I wanted to ask about is where does the corporate income tax fit in this? I'm not a Democrat or Republican either. I don't have the same critique that the previous caller has, but I think that they're both parties are quite corporatist, and that's why I think we hear no discussion of what I found in the Southtown Economist years ago, and I think it's probably gotten no better, which is that of the 100 largest corporations in the U.S., 99 have a presence in Illinois, and they pay negligible state income tax. And I don't know if it's all a combination of some kind of abeyances and tricks and stuff. I've been counseled again and again, even by my father, that a corporate income tax is just another way of sales tax because, you know, they'll just pass it along. Well, that may be true, but it presumes that there's no competitiveness in the system. Now, if there's corporations that compete with each other, they won't just be able to pass it on. So I think it should be at least tested. And the fact that I just hear no discussion, you know, and it, again, it's encumbered by this constitutional provision that says there's a fixed ratio between corporate tax and personal income tax and et cetera, et cetera. But in a, what you call a modern tax system, where does the role of corporate income tax? And the GRE, as I was one of the things I begrudged Blagojevich for, was ruining the idea of it, because that also is almost always dismissed as a sales tax. But it doesn't necessarily. It's actually a lame way of getting around the fact that there is no good way to tax corporations.
Well, let's get some response here from the guest.
On the GRT, though, it's got real problems with tax pyramiding, right? So if you're taxing every transaction, business to business to business, you end up putting a tax on a tax on a tax on a tax. The European model of going to a VAT, a value-added tax, would be a more sane way to get that tax done. It'd just be complicated to start it in the U.S. since no one's doing it in the U.S. now. And putting together a thoughtful VAT is a challenge and probably not the first thing I would look to. As far as taxing corporate income, there's one issue there that people don't talk about, but they should, and I think it leads to a lot of distorted views. Most corporations don't pay income taxes because of their legal structure. What do I mean by that? Only a classic C corporation pays corporate income tax. If you're formed as an S corporation or a limited liability company or a limited partnership, there is no income tax that applies to you. What happens in that case is the owners of the business, whether they're called shareholders in an S corp or members in a limited liability company or partners in an LLC, partnership, they pay taxes directly on the profits of the business in income taxes. So say you and I each own 50% of the stock of an S corporation and it made $100 in profits. Whether or not that $100 in profits got distributed down to me and you, we'd each pay personal income taxes on $50 of the corporation's profits. And so there's that level of corporate taxation that people don't realize gets paid every year. They say, oh, 70% of the companies don't pay any income taxes. No, their owners do. And their owners do on the profits of the business. And that's just a legal structure thing that gets missed. Now, those big companies that locate in Illinois, there are, frankly, some major loopholes available that allow them to evade paying corporate taxes. But it's also the way we assess the portion of their income that's taxable to Illinois versus the rest of their sales around the world. Now, think about it. Even if you're GM and you decide to put your headquarters in Illinois, most of your sales aren't in Illinois, right? So only a small portion of your actual international business ends up being taxable as something geared to Illinois. And we had a change in law back in the middle 90s that basically went to what's called the single sales factor, where we only look at the percentage of sales that company makes in Illinois versus the rest of the world, and that's the portion of their profits we'll tax in Illinois. And that did lead to a decrease in corporate tax revenue that was relatively significant, maybe $150, $200 million loss of revenue every year. But at the end of the day, you have to find some way to apportion their income to your state. You can't tax it all.
All right. Let's see. I think next we'll be talking with someone in Peoria. That'll be line three. Hello.
Hi. Can you comment on? It seems like the state will say we're gonna spend this money. How are you gonna get the money? Oh, we're gonna expand gambling. I'll just let you comment on that. Whether that's a good idea. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I know there's some politicians that would love to go to slots for tots for education funding, but I don't think that's probably the right way to go. And let me say why, and it's got a number of different factors. First of all, I've already noted that Illinois is one of the more regressive taxing states in the country. We're actually the sixth most regressive taxing state in the entire country. Gambling is regressive. Let's face it, it's not the Pritzker family going down to the local casino and betting the month's rent on number seven, right? So you've got low and middle income families, you've got senior citizens making up your predominant number of gamblers. So it's highly regressive. Number two, it's highly inefficient. I mean, if the state decides to impose a tax on you, it's a dollar-for-dollar transaction. If you have to pay a 10% tax on a dollar transaction, you pay 10 cents, period. Gambling. You have to lose $7 or $8 gambling for every dollar I collect in taxes. It's a highly inefficient way to go about it. I mean, we are expecting people to lose a lot more of their money to generate the same amount of revenue. So it's a problem from that standpoint. Third, it's a very unstable revenue source. It doesn't grow with inflation over time. So if you get, let's just pick a number out of the air, $100 million from gambling in year one, you'll pretty much get $100 million in year two and year three and year four. Well, after inflation, that $100 million in year two is worth a little less, and in year three it's worth even less than that in real terms. Year four, even less than that. So 5 or 6 years down the road, these static flatline revenue sources really lead to part of that structural imbalance, the mismatch between revenue growth and cost growth over time. So it's a very poor way to raise revenue. Now, from an economic standpoint, it's a net job loser in Illinois, and here's why. Gaming works in Nevada as a job creator because 90-some-odd percent of the gamblers in Nevada don't live in Nevada. They come there from other states, take their money, and dump it into Nevada's casinos. 85% plus of the gambling in Illinois is done by Illinois residents. That means people from our state are taking their money out of the local economy that they would be spending on dry cleaning or car repair or grocery purchases and gambling it. The problem is most of the gambling facilities are owned by out-of-state entities. So the profits leave Illinois, and the businesses that are in Illinois that would have received the gamblers' money in purchases of X, Y, or Z products or services lose that money. So it's got a net negative economic multiplier effect on Illinois. So the bottom line is every way you look at gambling, it's a bad idea.
All right. We'll try to get at least one more caller. This would be Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm getting in late on the program. But last week I read an article about the state of North Dakota and how they're one of the few states that runs a surplus, and they attributed it to they have a state banking system. Your thoughts on that?
They've got like eight people. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be too quick on that, but I got to say, North Dakota has a pretty monolithic population. They're not very diverse. They don't have any major industrial areas or city areas. It's a pretty basic economy and with a small number of people and very few problems. And it's really not a comparable to a complex state like Illinois or any of the other major industrial states. You just can't look at the two.
Okay.
All right. And on to, I think the call. Let's go to Belgium, line three. Hello.
Hello. And the problem with taxes is that the people who impose them are elected, and they're elected over and over again, and they run on things and no taxes. So the only way to fix this problem is to limit people to one term and do your work and get out. Seems to me that'd be the way to fix the problem.
Again.
Okay. Is this Chris Lawson?
No.
No. Okay. Okay. You sound like him.
Oh, thank you. I guess.
Yeah. No, the idea of term limits, you know, is something that I am newly interested in. I never was a supporter of it. I always felt that we had something called voting that was the equivalent of term limits, but it really isn't. And it really isn't in a system like the one we've established in Illinois that concentrates so much of the control over elections in moneyed interests, and whether those are the parties and party leadership or whether those are big lobbyists or big entities, whether they're businesses or unions that could give a lot of money, it really distorts the process. And we really don't have one where I think there are enough competitive elections. So possibly the idea of term limits might be something we should look at in Illinois.
And it seems that at this point, I think that, that people who look at the General Assembly say that the reality is that most of the seats are quite safe. None of them are really in contention. So, you know, the chances of some significant turnover. And if you couple that with the tremendous power that's now in the hands of the leadership, and in part as a result of something that happened in a number of years ago that everybody's forgotten about, that Pat Quinn had a lot to do with, was shrinking the size of the legislature, you really set up a situation for no change at all.
Yeah, boy, wouldn't it be great to go back to cumulative voting and have a third representative for every Senate district, because that really led to far more moderate and negotiated processes in Springfield where you could get some public policy going forward, because every district would have a representative from the other party in it, which just forces you to be a little bit more reasonable and less ideological in your approach to public policy.
We have to finish. Some last thought that you'd like to leave folks with?
It's pretty simple. I mean, at this juncture, Illinois is one of the lowest spending and lowest tax states in the nation. And despite that, from a public sector standpoint, it has seen its economic growth lag the Midwest and the nation for years, its higher tax and higher spending neighbors. So we can't blame our economic problems on either of those aspects of government like we'd like to. And it may be counterintuitive, but really during a recession, and this is according to Mark Zandi, a Republican chief economist for Moody's.com, the best way to solve a deficit if you want to shorten your recession at the state level is to raise taxes progressively and maintain or enhance spending. We need to have that kind of discussion. We need it to be a bipartisan discussion, and we really need both parties to step to the plate and acknowledge there is no solution without a revenue enhancement.
Our guest in this hour, Ralph Martiri. He's the executive director of the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. If you'd like to find out more about them, you can go to their website, CTBA. That's the initials of the organization, ctbaonline.org. And if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, you'd like to hear more from him. He'll be speaking at the City Council Chambers in Urbana on South Vine at noon today. It's an event sponsored by the Champaign County League of Women Voters, and anyone interested should be welcome. Feel welcome. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me on.
WILO programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe offers specialty coffees, breakfast, featuring a choice of cold and hot breakfast items from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., and to-go sandwiches and salads for lunch. Bevere Cafe is student-operated in Bevere Hall at the corner of Gregory and Goodwin in Urbana. We'll take a break at this point, as we usually do. When we come back, we'll be talking about what are the most reliable autos, and our guest will be Mike Quincy. He's an auto content specialist with Consumer Reports. The new issue of their magazine presents their annual car reliability survey. So that's up in the next hour. First, though, we'll break for an update on the markets and news. Stay tuned.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Wheat and soybeans are up, and corn is holding pretty much firm as we take a look at the numbers right now. December wheat in Kansas City at 542.25 is up 7. March at 560 up 8.5. And May at 571.75 up 9. In Chicago, December wheat, 536.75 up 5. March, 556.5 up 4.5. May at 572.5 up 7.5. December corn unchanged at 394. March at 408.75 down 0.5. May at 418.25 down 1. July at 426 down 1.75. September 2010, 434 down 3/4. November soybeans at 983.25 up 19.5. January at 990.75 up 18.5. March at 995.5 up 16.5. May at 997.5 up 13.75. July 2010 at 1001 up 11.5. And August 2010 at 991.25. Up 1.25. The soybean meal for December, $298.20.